And so, and Mr. Chairman, I think that's the fundamental problem. That's what we're all struggling with right here is you know, we have the Ways and Means Committee hasn't met yet. And so we're constrained with, from our point of view, what are arbitrary budget targets, you know, that are, you know, caps or whatever you, allocations, whatever term you prefer to use this year. But, you know, those numbers relative to like state troopers, for example, they're arbitrary. They're not based on a national standard. They're not based on some systematic assessment of what the need is. They're more based on what our revenue stream is likely to be. And while that's not an unimportant detail, it doesn't address the fundamental issue, and it doesn't address the ways and means question. And so that's why we're struggling here.
Representative Williams.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, I think I'm sure most of the amendments that we're going to be talking about today are going to be very good. I'm not going to argue that point. I think we probably need them. You know, but what we lose sight of today, or I think what we're losing sight of, is the plan that we have. And I think if we could agree that we need a long-term fiscal plan, which I think we do, we know what the budget is out there. The governor gave us a budget that we looked at. He says that we're going to be spending $580 million more than we're taking in. Now, we know that there's something wrong there. You talk about a business plan. There's something wrong with that type of budgeting. And I'm not saying that it's the governor's way off base or what, but the budget that we have before us that we're trying to work under, and we're trying to keep our spending as it was last year until we can come up with a long-term fiscal plan for the state so that we can fund all of these amendments or all of this, all of the needs that we have on a better, so that we could feel better about it, that we do have a plan. We're not there yet. But where we are today is we have a budget that we have from last year. We're going to fund as much as we did last year, and this is where we're at. I agree that we need more state troopers. I agree we need more education funding. I agree we need to take care of the public transportation. All of those things need to be taken care of. And here we are today. We're acting like we are broke. Because we had a vote on September 14th, 1999, of a plan that this body, the legislature, came up with that was presented to the people on an advisory vote, and they voted it down 85%, by 85% of the people that voted. That kind of scares us here. You know? Don't mess with the permanent fund. We all went through this. We didn't have enough information, or whatever the reason was. What we do know is that that vote did not take care of the problem that we have, we're faced with today. We have to come up with a long-term fiscal plan, and I hope the people that are watching us today make sure that we do come up with a long-term fiscal plan. We can sit out here all day long and argue about why we need all these things, and I almost agree with you, Representative Davies, that we should adjourn and come up with and just talk about a fiscal plan. But that ain't going to happen today, okay? At least I hope it doesn't. we have to take care of this budget that we have today, and we're going to work on it. We know what the problem is. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that we're going to spend $580 million more this year and $700 million more next year, and we only have 3.1 in our billion in the constitutional budget reserve, and we're going to be out of this in another 3-4 years, 5 years, maybe 6 years. You know, we can all sit back. I think at least the older ones that have been here longer can sit back and say, "Well, they told me in 1999 not to mess with the permanent fund. We've got a constitutional budget reserve. Well, let's just pull more money out of there. I'm going to retire here in 6 years anyway. I mean, I'm going to be too old." Then we'll point at Representative Croft, because he's the youngest guy, and he'll be here. It's his fault. He went in a permanent fund.
It's all your fault.
But I think, you know, we're talking about something I think we all agree that we need to have done today, and that's more money and what have you. But we all have to agree also is we have to, we're trying to keep our spending down until we can at least come up with a long-term fiscal plan. Maybe I'm saying it wrong, okay? But we can't go on like this all day long.
And I hope we won't, Representative. See what you did, Representative Bundy.
His amendment, not mine.
Representative Croft, are you going to wrap up for Representative Moses?
No, and I, as Representative Davies said, appreciate the latitude. Maybe we can get a lot of these things said in this one and only touch on them in others. We don't have to have the full discussion. But the point that struck me as we were having it is we've spent more time now accidentally talking about the fiscal plan than we have in the previous 60 days talking about it in this committee. I mean, we have not yet had any discussion, and it only comes up now on amendment number 4 to the public safety budget. We should have been. I hope we'll use the next 60 days to talk about it. We should have been last year. Probably time to come back to this very issue and this very amendment. And what I propose to say before is, does anyone think that the current funding of public safety through this current level of troopers with the increased numbers is adequate? It's not adequate by national standards. I don't think it's adequate by the crime figures that we know from rural Alaska. We should address adequate public safety at the very least. And I just put it to the committee that this, without the amendment, it's possible it's not adequate with it, but it gets us in the step in the right direction. It's not adequate without it. And so, therefore, we ought to pass amendment number 4, at least.
Question.
Want to wrap up, Representative Moses?
Well, it's interesting. You know, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out where our problem is. Even I can figure that out. You know, it's interesting that we do a number of things down here every session to force local government to impose additional taxes of some sort in order to survive. But we can't do anything to solve the state's problem as a whole. Now, we got over $30 billion in savings account. Our surplus earnings after inflation-proofing the permanent fund approaches $1 billion. And we can't take care of public safety to the satisfaction of the safety of the citizens of this state. There's something wrong. Something is absolutely wrong. We're starting to look like a bunch of gutless wonders down. It's pitiful. We spend all this time quibbling over it. Hope that's a wrap up.
Certainly.
There we go. Hold on. Last word on this subject.
Don't provoke another debate.
I hope I won't. I want to say this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this will be my last discussion on the long-term plan. There is significant effort regarding a long-term plan. And I'm confident that there will be one before this body, before the end of this session. And I'm hopeful that the members of this body and the other body have the courage to act upon it and put it in place and do what we're here for. And so we will have a plan, but it's up to us then to act upon it and make it happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Number 4.
Was that the plan or was that?
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Whitaker.
No.
The Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Absolutely yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
Representative Williams?
No.
4-7-A.
So amendment number 4, public safety, is passed. Hopefully we've got that out of our system. Public safety, number 5, Representative Moses. It was destined to happen sooner or later, yeah. Representative Moses.
This is troopers.
I move amendment number 5. Ask for unanimous consent.
I think no, you failed short of that. Representative Moses. Go right ahead and debate.
Well, this is another important amendment for our great state, and for the same reasons I advocated for number 4, I think we should go ahead and pass it.
I'm tempted to say for the same reasons I object and then we can just vote. But I did want to point out that there is has been appropriated $15 million of federal funds to be applied to VPS programs, and I hope that that will supplant the need for the constables. The constables would be a new reinstatement of an old program, would be a new program, and if to use some of the arguments we've heard here before, if we need to focus on the current programs and try to fund them adequately, I would suggest before we install a new program.
Representative Davies?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, the $15 million, as I understand, is looking at VSPO type programs and not constable, so it's a different thing. And I think it's also not intended to supplant the state effort. It's supposed to be an increment, an add-on to the state effort. I don't think the federal government is expecting to fund things at the state level that the state ought to be doing. And I don't think I've heard Senator Stevens in other contexts. I haven't heard it directly in this one, but I've heard him in other contexts saying he doesn't expect that kind of funding to replace the basic effort that the state of Alaska ought to be carrying out. So while that's there and it's appreciated and it could increment our efforts in the VSPO level, it certainly, I don't think it addresses directly and shouldn't address the constable issue. And the idea of reestablishing the constable program, I think, has a lot of merit to it. One of the fundamental problems we have with blue shirts in rural Alaska is the policy, and it's a good policy in general for blue shirts, is the rotation of residency. But in rural Alaska, there are situations where that's the wrong thing to do, where we need to have a program in place where people can stay put and be part, have the respect of being part of the group, part of the neighborhood. And I think that's the fundamental reason why we ought to establish this program, or reestablish it. It's a different thing than VSPOs, and it's a different thing than state troopers. And it fills, I think, a real needed law enforcement niche in rural Alaska that is presently totally unfilled. So this isn't just another trooper or another VSPO. This is a different kind of approach to solving the problem, which has, I believe, a lot of merit, and we really should seriously consider doing it.
Representative Moses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe the money that was appropriated to AFN was intended for something of this nature. There's $15 or $16 million. Other than that, I'm not aware of, and I stand corrected. I served with Senator Stevens in this body, and I know how unhappy he would be if we sat here and tried to misdirect or redirect those funds that he got approved for a specific purpose, which I understand was for alcoholism in the bush. If I'm wrong, I stand corrected. Well, I think it's kind of unfair to use that as a scapegoat on this amendment and the next amendments, say that should take care of our obligation to law enforcement in the bush. I'm a little concerned how we're handling the VSOs under nonprofit organizations. I think we ought to bite the bullet and have VPSOs and all law enforcement in the bush handled under one department. Fragmenting out, I think, is wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Moses, as I said yesterday when we began, or 2 days ago, we began this process, from my observation, we're largely attempting a status quo budget. Certainly, two concerns I have with this program is that, in fact, it is a major new initiative, so it would be an expansion of our current services, and beyond that, I'm not certain, even if we were to go to this type of approach, whether this is the most efficient approach, because certainly the constables would be basically troopers for all intents and purposes, and we know how expensive troopers are. And I think that we, if you were to even venture down this path, there may be a more cost-efficient way of doing it than having these guys be, in essence, full-blown troopers, which a constable really is in terms of pay and everything else. So anyway, that's the reason for my objection. Representative Davies?
Just on that point, it's my impression that, in fact, they aren't as expensive.
It's very close. They're not representative.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a trooper is $160,000 a year because it includes a vehicle. Constable is $130,000.
Pretty expensive. $130,000, just the same. Representative Brock?
We're going to hear a lot, I think, over the next three amendments about the $15 million that Senator Stevens was able to get for AFN. And I got a copy of the grant, or of the congressional record that describes the grant. The main limitation is that it can only apply to dry villages. Right. So it does not, it's not a general purpose tool. It can't go to any village that hasn't voted itself dry. And that's a major limitation. For that very reason, it can't replace the kind of efforts that we're trying to replace. But more importantly, it has three specific areas where such grants shall be used to. One is VPSOs. And it specifically says, and encourage retention that are consistent with agreements the state of Alaska has. We'll come back to that in the salaries. I don't believe you can use this grant to do anything different from what you do already as a state. In other words, it can't be used, it could be used to hire, it cannot be used for raises, but I don't believe it can be used for constables either because they're not a VPSO. And then there are two other categories, essentially acquisition of law enforcement equipment and restorative justice, sentencing circles type thing. So I don't think this constable program fits into any of the three enumerated categories, and even if you could squash it into one of them, it would only apply in dry villages. So here and in other areas, my reading of the restrictions on that grant mean it can't be used, at the very least it can't be used for the constable program.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft is correct. I don't believe it could be used for constables either, but if a village had a VPSO, perhaps the need of a constable would go down, is the intent of my comment.
Any additional debate on amendment number 5, public safety? Luann.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Representative
Lynn. No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Whitaker.
No.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Williams?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
No. 3A, 8A.
So amendment number 5 has failed. Amendment number 6, public safety. Representative Moses?
I move amendment number 6.
Object.
There is objection. Representative Moses?
Well, I feel very strongly that the few troopers we have, we need supply them with first-class equipment. I think that's very important.
I think, Representative Moses, this is probably a capital budget item, and as such, I think perhaps would be more that we'll certainly be looking and evaluating this request as it comes forward from the public safety and the capital budget. That would be the purpose of my objection at this point in time.
Is that a promise?
A further consideration.
Look at it.
Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of merit. And generally, by and large, when there are capital requests or need, fundamental needs for the troopers to enable them to do their jobs, we've been fairly favorable in the past. And I hope Representative Davies will reflect that we've tried to respond where, if and where possible. Representative Davies?
Thank you. I guess it is a question, though, about how we fund fleet replacements. Do we do that in the capital budget or do we do it in an operating budget mode? And the state equipment fleet replacements, how do we handle that? I mean, it's a question. I don't know how we've done that. There are good philosophical reasons to put routine, you know, this comes in the category of routine equipment replacement. You know, you expect an automobile to wear out and to hence require replacement. Often those kinds of replacement things fall in an operating budget, so I'm wondering how we've handled the state equipment fleet.
I believe this is a capital improvement because of the cost. There are like desks and a few things of that nature that go into the equipment side from my recollection in the past, but I think something as substantive as a new vehicle would probably come out of the equipment fleet replacement.
Ken, could you jump up here a quick second if you don't mind? And the question being, are emergency response vehicles traditionally part of your operating or capital budget request?
For the record, Ken Bischoff, Admin Services Director, Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chairman, in reference to this request, the troopers believe that there's a need to upgrade some of their aging vehicles. I think the question, I believe the statute speaks to the definition of a capital project as $25,000 or more. This could be a capital budget item. I believe the troopers are viewing this as an increment that would be recurring for the next several years to bring their fleet up to standards. That could be a repeatable capital project each of those 3 years. It shows up in the operating budget. It makes no difference to the department if whether it's in the operating budget or the capital.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
Could I also ask Annalie to respond to that, just as a budget question?
Thanks. For the record, Annalie McConnell, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. As a matter of policy, I don't think it's a good idea to begin funding trooper vehicles, individual vehicles that are needed as separate capital items. We do incorporate these as part of our regular operating budget.
I only stopped you because I don't believe these are the regular vehicles. It says the emergency response vehicles. Are they different from the normal trooper vehicle, Ken?
Mr. Chairman, no, they're not.
They're not. They're the regular vehicles?
Correct.
So what we would be looking to do actually is to try to get the trooper vehicles to a more reasonable level, but there's still an ongoing expense, and this still does come through the state equipment fleet. So having it as part of the operating budget is consistent with how we treat the vehicles now for troopers and how I would do it. This is not a one-time item in the sense that we expect to have a vehicle for a couple of years and then we wouldn't need it anymore. We would need these vehicles on an ongoing basis.
How have you been doing in the past, Ken?
Mr. Chairman, the way the policy works is if an agency needs to establish a new, not previously existing vehicle, just like a position, it's the agency's responsibilities for budgeting for the upfront cost to acquire the vehicle in the first place. And then from that point forward, we pay the Department of Transportation what is called replacement rates, so that over a standard lifetime, like typically 3 years for patrol vehicles, there will be enough funding accumulated in the Highway Working Capital Fund to replace that vehicle 3 years down the road.
So why hasn't that occurred?
In this case, I believe due to a series of years of attainments, the vehicle fleet is at a level where the troopers believe it needs an additional influx of funding to accelerate the replacement of these emergency vehicles.
What has changed so dramatic over the past? I mean, certainly you've been replacing trooper vehicles for a lot longer since before I was around here.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And dramatic is a relative term because we have over 300 vehicles, and 100,000 would provide funding for roughly replacing three of those vehicles.
Okay. Any further discussion on amendment number six? Lynn?
Should be replacing 100 of them this year.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Hudson?
No.
Representative Lancaster?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Whitaker?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Kroll?
Yes.
Representative Davies?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
Representative Williams?
No.
3A, 7A.
So amendment number six has failed. That brings us to amendment number seven. Representative Moses.
I move amendment number seven.
Object.
There is objection. Representative Moses.
Well, I think we, our VPSOs are underpaid, and it's long overdue for them to have a salary increase. Actually, along with that, I think they are entitled to better retirement and health benefits. Well, hopefully we'll pass this amendment.
Representative Bundy?
Well, I guess we'd all like a raise. One of the problems in the big turnover rate for VPSOs, of course, is they're working in a small village where they're related to a great many of the people that they have to deal with in a law enforcement capacity. And I guess I'm not convinced that a raise would reduce the turnover rate. They would still have that very difficult situation of having to arrest their
brother-in-law or some other relative, or at least deal with them in a law enforcement role. This is a maintenance budget, and we've asked that they maintain their current salary, and house of cards that we've put together would require that, though I see Senator Taylor's here. I'm sure he would entertain an amendment to fund these raises out of the public safety aircraft VRU.
Representative Davies.
Thank you. Well, I guess the it's hard to know exactly what would cause a reduction in turnover rate, but in the past few years, we have increased trooper oversight. We've improved training. We've improved the retirement program a little bit. We have purchased some better equipment for VPSOs, and over that same period of time, there has been a drop in the turnover rate from 41% to about 30%. So I guess that it seems to me that that may be some evidence that if we improve the working conditions of the VPSOs, that we might drop that turnover rate a little bit. So I think that while there's no guarantees of that, I think it seems to me to be a likely thing. The other question is the fundamental question is the salary level appropriate? And I think, again, this is another example of a thing that we're going to see throughout this budget, is that over the last few years of belt tightening and not adequately responding to increase in inflation and population, that salaries have dropped and are not competitive. And this is just one more example of that, where we're going to need to start funding people's salaries at appropriate levels. The reason citing high turnover rate is not to say that necessarily that funding this would reduce that dramatically, but rather the other way around, of saying that the high turnover rate is testimony to the fact that the salary rates are too low. That's one of the concerns. It's one of those canaries in the mine kind of things. It tells you something. And I think that's really the fundamental question that we should be asking is is this an appropriate level? I think most people that have looked at that question in terms of, what kind of service we're asking, Representative Bundy indicated the very difficult working circumstances that many of these people are in. Housing is another big issue that I've heard time and time again, that if we could help provide housing, that would improve the situation. I think that any objective review of the salary level for VPSOs would come up with the conclusion that it's too low for the job we're asking them to do. We're really, in some respects, we're asking these people to be state troopers and emergency response people and emergency fire people. And, you just name the emergency, and VPSOs are asked to respond to that, under some pretty difficult circumstances and without the level of training that troopers have or that oftentimes firefighters or EMTs have. So although many of them do have, I don't want to denigrate that, many of them do have EMT training and that sort of thing. But I think the fundamental question that needs to be asked is the salary high enough? And I think the answer is no.
Representative Moses.
I think Representative Bundy gave a good example of why we should increase the salaries. In the event that there isn't anyone there in the veteran community that will work for the that fit into that position or wants to take the responsibility of having to arrest his relatives or brother, et cetera, perhaps then somebody will get us moderate improvement in the salary would move into their community. There isn't anybody available in the community. And like Representative Bundy pointed out, that is one of the drawbacks in the community. So all the more reason why there should be a salary increase because of the conditions they have to work under. Being called all hours of night, and in many cases it's a reason to arrest your own relatives. I say, that's all the more reason to give them a considerable raise in salary. So we're due.
Any more discussion on amendment number 7? Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern is that the subcommittee, in looking at the AFN grant, might have used the AFN grant to not give this all the consideration that's due. And the reason that I say that is on the subcommittee report, it says the subcommittee recognized a $15 million grant that will go directly to AFN for the raises and hiring of new VPSOs throughout Alaska. This federal grant would more than cover the governor's request for a 15% pay raise for existing VPSOs. The subcommittee is supportive of this grant and hopes that the public safety needs of villages in Alaska are met with this money. And as we talked about on the prior amendment, the grant cannot, in my opinion, and I think the language just doesn't support, cannot support the raise, this amendment. So to the extent that the subcommittee, and it said it in its own report, thought that it could, might be various reasons why that impression might have been out there, I think it's pretty clear that it can't. So,
Representative Croft, just to that point, I've read the same amendment, the statutory, federal statutory language, and I'm not convinced that in those villages that are dry, that it could not be utilized to pay them more.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then on that point, the grant item number one, that talks about VPSOs, the full text of it is, the grants shall be used to employ village public safety officers, herein referred to as VPSOs, under such terms and conditions that would encourage retention of such VPOs and that are consistent with agreements with the state of Alaska for the provision of such VPSO services. So they have to meet the agreements that we already have with VPSOs. You hire them on the same basis. And I do not believe that allows you to hire them on a different basis.
I think, I guess I would interpret that different, Representative Croft. I think that language, in my mind, does not restrict their ability to pay them more.
Well,
just our current contract is there, but it doesn't say that you can't pay them more. Representative Davies?
Well, on that point, if I can just interject here, I mean, it would the only way that this would make sense in terms of allowing an increase is if we were to explicitly say that what we were going to do is increase salaries at non-dry villages to be matched by an increase at these,
I'm not really arguing the merits or not. I just was responding to the point that Representative Croft was saying, it's clear that this cannot be utilized. And I'm just saying, it's not so clear to me.
But anyway, the issue is we're talking about an amendment on a raise.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can you use that money to raise salaries at a, clearly, by its face, it's restricted to only VPSOs at a dry village.
Correct.
So could you hire those VPSOs at a higher rate than the existing ones? And I guess what I'm saying is I don't think that you can on the terms of that, and that what we would have to do is we would have to find some mechanism say that we're going to increase the salaries only at non-dry villages.
I can come back. I mean, I do think it's very clear. I know the chair and I disagree on that. We can do some more analysis of it or ask for some more legal opinions. What is absolutely clear is that it only applies to dry villages. And so it doesn't work for a lot of the villages that we would be serving with this. It at the very least, would be a very clumsy use of it. It only applies half, and it may not apply there. And as I said, my worry was that it was considered by the subcommittee as a substitute for it. And the chance that we have to discuss it on its merits independent of that is here and now. And so I think we should be very careful before we apply this grant to it. It doesn't apply very easily and may not apply at all.
Wet is where the knee is.
Is there any further discussion or debate? Representative Davies?
Just a quick observation on that, too, which is that because of the the wet versus dry and the relationship between alcohol and crime, it's often at the wet villages where the need is the largest and where this is totally restricted.
One second, please.
Easier.
All right, any further discussion on amendment number 7? All right, Luann?
Representative Davies?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
No.
Representative Hudson?
No.
Representative Lancaster?
No.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Whitaker?
No.
Representative Bundy?
No.
Representative Kraft?
Yes.
Representative Williams?
No.
Representative Mulder?
No.
4 yeas, 7 nays.
So amendment number 7 is closed. Has failed. Amendment number 8 by Representative Moses.
I move amendment number 8.
Object.
There is objection. Representative Moses.
Currently, there's still approximately 70 some odd communities in the state without a VPSO. This will make a small dent in improving that situation. I think it's badly needed in a lot of the communities, and I urge we pass the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, well, we've had a pretty thorough discussion of the federal grant that's going to allow expansion of VPSOs, and I certainly acknowledge that that only applied to dry villages, and I think we have to acknowledge why Senator Stevens puts that in there. I think he put that in there as a carrot to for more villages to go dry. So I don't think that should be looked at as a detriment for villages that are not currently served by VPSOs to get a VPSO. There is a carrot there for them to, as Representative Davis pointed out, alcohol can be a huge problem in a wet village. And this would improve law enforcement in two ways if they chose to move in the direction to use this grant.
Further discussion and debate. Representative Croft, I can see you, John.
Just real briefly, it seems to me a dangerous precedent to take such a core state government area as public safety and use a grant to the Alaska Federation of Natives as an excuse for us to not provide that service, particularly in the context that we're in of an ongoing discussion about the status of tribal governments in this state, to defer to federal authority and funding, to the private entity, the Alaska Federation of Natives, is dangerous, possibly legally, but I'm thinking more on a public policy level. At the same time, we're saying we should take care of fish and game and other areas that some entities want taken care of by tribal authorities. To let this be an excuse for us to not take care of something as core as public safety is dangerous. I think, as I said, dangerous legally, dangerous from a consistency level when we speak to the federal government. Also dangerous just in our relation with those communities. When we say, no, you don't need to have a tribal government or the federal take care of you, we will. But we're not going to take care of something as basic as village public safety and look to AFN or the federal government for that is not only inconsistent, I think it damages the position that this body has taken. It damages the argument and affects the argument on the entire relationship of us with the federal government and us with tribes.
Well, just to point out that I think since its inception, the VPSO program has been administered through the Native Corporation, and I guess I don't see this as a step toward tribal government, but just a mechanism to provide an administrator who's already in the area, and which puts more money in the VPSO program. Rather than having the state provide the administration.
Representative Moses.
Well, I can't help but think that Senator Stevens had in mind that the grant was mainly for helping assist communities that wanted to go dry, and the side mention of VPSOs goes along with keeping it dry or providing the enforcement to keep alcohol from being shipped in. Along that line, I'd like to comment about the close-up students that were down. One of them, his project was to eliminate the bootlegging in his community. It's sad when our high school students are pointing out to us what should be done. And, of course, I had to point out the fact, well, unless you can catch them actually bootlegging, it's hard to keep them from shipping booze in, unless it's a dry town. So I said, probably the first thing you want to think about is making it a dry town, which tends to get a petition going and have a vote on it. And it's very interesting to have a high school student promoting that.
Thank you, Representative Moses. Grant?
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
Yes.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Whitaker.
Yes.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Mulder.
No.
5 yay, 5 nay.
So amendment number 8 is failed.
Williams was called.
Amendment number 9, Representative Moses.
Chairman, I withdraw amendment number 9.
All right. Amendment number 10, Representative Davies. Certainly a familiar item.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the one I talked about earlier that,
small technical,
that will take care of the court situation.
That's right.
I move number 10, Mr.
Object, Representative Davies. Speak to your amendment, please.
Mr. Chairman, this is an item that, as you indicated, that we've heard several years now. The court brings it back to us at least every year in my memory. It's what we're talking about is the court security officers, court services officers. These CSOs are the people that provide for safety in our courtrooms. Fortunately, we haven't had a serious violent incident. But those kinds of incidents are increasing on a nationwide basis. We've had close calls. We have one of the reasons why I'm very pleased that we're about to open the new building in Fairbanks is because of the circumstance that we have there now, where all of the plaintiffs and the defendants and juries and everybody pass each other in the hallway. It's a recipe for disaster, the situation we have there now. We will improve it with the traffic flow problems in the new building a little bit. But Mr. Chairman, this court services officer program began in 1988 with 30 authorized positions. And today we have 32, 12 years later. So, and in that time, in those 12 years, we've added new Superior Court judges in Dillingham, Kenai, Ketchikan, increase, maybe the rate hasn't increased, but right. But because of increased population, the numbers continue to climb.
I knew what you were saying.
And we've reflected that in adding new Superior Court judges. So the demand has clearly increased over that time. Clearly, then we're diminishing the service that's available. The question is, how long can we keep doing that before we actually have a violent incident? And the court is increasingly concerned about this. They brought it to our attention multiple years in a row. The court is very polite when they bring their budget requests to us. They are almost deferential in saying, you know, they come with their hat in their hand and they say, you know, if it please the legislature, you know, we sure could use this money. And they haven't gone out on a big campaign or a public relations effort, which maybe they ought to consider at some point, because we have consistently not responded to that request. And I think at some point we're going to have to start seriously considering it. And I hope that time is now. We have an increasing need. We have a clear need for at least 6 more CSOs in Fairbanks. We need at least 1 in Bethel. We could use 10 more in Anchorage in your town, Mr. Chairman. Dillingham 2, Juneau 3, Soldotna Kenai 2, Palmer 3, Ketchikan 3, Kodiak, Kotzebue, Nome, Sitka, and Seward each need one to respond to this situation. I think it's clear that case filings for violent felonies have increased by 37% and 27% for domestic. These are the kinds of situations where you might expect to have these kinds of tensions that exist that could spill over in a courtroom setting. And we really are playing with fire by not increasing our ability to deal with these circumstances as the workload has increased. So I think it's a situation where it's kind of like deferred maintenance, Mr. Chairman. If you don't keep that in a little bit and a little bit, pretty soon you get so far behind that it's going to be a big jump to catch up, and that's unfortunate. That's why this amendment is pretty large right now. We haven't kept up with this in the last 12 years. We've only added two positions in 12 years. So I'm asking that we consider adding $3.7 million in general funds to provide an adequate level of security in our courtrooms. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Davies. You're right. We have looked at this amendment, I think, for as long as I've been here, we've looked at this amendment. It's coming forward. And, I give great credit to the troopers who do provide public safety at our courts. They've done an outstanding job. The incidence rate within the courts have not increased, due in large part to the fact that they do a very good job of their scarce resources. And this is another one of those items that when you look at trying to divide scarce resources, you try and address the very, very pressing problems. And while I respect the fact that a threat exists out there, and certainly we all acknowledge that even within the legislature, a threat exists of something bad happening. At the same time, they're doing a very good job with what resources they have, and I respect that. And at this point in time, I would just object to the addition of that to the budget right now. Representative Davies?
I don't know. It's just the circumstances. It just begs some kind of response. I mean, I just want to point out in Anchorage, which is the only location where court security officers are dedicated to providing the security function, there are three separate buildings, 40 courtrooms, and two CSOs. Doesn't sound like a good situation to me.
Like I said, Representative Davies, they do a very good job. Is there any further discussion on Amendment Number 10? Luann.
President Whitaker.
No.
President Bundy.
No.
President Croft.
Yes.
President Davies.
Yes.
President Foster.
No.
President Harris.
No.
President Hudson.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Williams.
No.
Representative Mulder.
No.
3A, 8 nay.
So amendment number 10 has failed. I requested that we take a break about 12:30, and this appears to be a pretty good time. Before we do, however, Senator Taylor has asked for a couple seconds to talk about, please join us, Senator Taylor, about some efforts that he and I believe Representative Davies.
We have two more amendments, and are we going to take those up before lunch? Or?
We'll take them up right now. I think okay. The avalanche will probably evoke a longer discussion than a couple minutes. An avalanche
kind of,
response?
Kind of. Have a lunch response?
Oh, very good.
Very nice. I concede defeat.
You got too much rest, Representative. Senator Taylor.
Chairman, thank you very much. I wanted to commend you and your committee on the hard work you've been doing on this budget, and we on the Senate side have started in that process also. During a Senate subcommittee meeting on this budget about 2 days ago, we learned some interesting things that are within this operating budget, not capital budget. We learned that the public safety now has a fleet of 5 helicopters. I wasn't aware of that. They have 3 R-44s, they have 1 R-22, and they have a long ranger, what's that one called, a Jet Bell long ranger. In addition to that, we now have 2 aircraft that are equipped for long-range patrols. We kind of inherited each of these, one back about 5-6 years ago, the other just this last year from the military. Each of these long-range aircraft were intended for the purpose, and they're buried within all the cost of maintaining them and operating them are buried within this operating budget. In fact, That is not what it's being utilized for. One of the aircraft is a turbocharged, pressurized cabin, basically a King Air, that sits here at a heated hangar in Juneau, where it has three people assigned to it. The first is a full-time blue shirt trooper pilot. The second is a full-time brown shirt protection officer pilot. And the third is a private pilot who is on standby call. That aircraft has really only been used to fly the governor around. It has not been used for Department of Public Safety protection, transportation, or patrol work. We were told that $150,000 of the operating expense of that is RSA'd to the governor's budget. I'm not here to debate with you or suggest whether or not the governor should have an aircraft. It may be very important for him to have an aircraft. That's not my concern. My concern is, why is it buried in the Department of Fish and Game's wildlife protection budget, and why don't we put it out there and say, yes, this is part of the governor's budget, and just convey it over to his portion of the operating budget. If you did that, it would free up a significant level of funds. It could be used by real troopers that are out there trying to enforce real laws instead of sitting around a heated hangar waiting for somebody to tell them to fly someplace. It seems to me that's worthy of at least taking a look at within this budget. I can tell you the people of Petersburg have been without a state trooper now for about 5 years. We've been promised every single year that a state trooper position would be put back in that community. That was a $137,000 line item that the Senate sent over last year. That was lost in the conference committee. Every single year that I've sat on this subcommittee on the Senate side, and that's the last 4 or 5 years with Senator Donnelly, every year we increase this budget. Incrementally, this budget has been increased, both by the House and by the Senate. Every year we go out to the public and we hear about how we cut the budget. That's unfortunate because it's not been accurate. And as we've increased the budget, personnel have been shifted around. Wrangell no longer has, and has not had since 1995, either a state trooper or a Fish and Game brown shirt enforcement officer. Yet Ketchikan, we found out, has 8 state troopers sitting in it with 4 enforcement officers down there. Why are they all being allocated to one community and 2 others denied? Why do we have a Fish and Game patrol officer sitting here in Juneau along with a state trooper just sitting in a hangar waiting to fly the governor someplace? Those were questions that we felt were of import. We've asked for additional information on those. That's coming into the subcommittee being chaired by Senator Osterman, who's also here. And all we're asking, I'm asking at this point, is before you close out the budget, take a look at that and maybe transferring that, because I think that we could use a couple more officers out in the field, and maybe the governor ought to pack that portion of his own budget if he wishes to have an airplane. That's fine. The other thing that came to our attention that was somewhat shocking is that the new commissioner, Mr. Godfrey, has removed 6 of our top troopers from their office space in Tudor, the Tudor facility in Anchorage, which was already a very crowded facility without much space to work in. That's because he's creating up there a new suite of offices for the commissioner's office. I didn't know if anybody on the committee was aware of that, but that's also buried within this operating budget. It's not going to show up as a capital expenditure any more than the purchase of those helicopters showed up as capital expenditures. They didn't. We never authorized them. Nor did it ever show up on the capital budget that we were purchasing or acquiring an aircraft for the governor to fly around the state in, and then providing him with pilots out of a budget that missed. I can tell you this much. Representative Bundy and I and Senator Osterman were visited by fishermen in just the last 2 weeks, begging us to please put out some stream guards so as to prevent an increasing problem with crick robbing going on in this state. I think that for the small amount of money that it would take to put a few stream guards out there, that certainly we may be able to find that within this budget and still provide for some of the increases that I know that you want to provide, Mr. Chairman, I know that I want to provide, and Senator Osterman does, to this budget. But my purpose here today was just to alert you to those two things, to thank you very much for the hard work you have done, and I want to thank you personally for the efforts that you've made in the past on this budget to incrementally increase it, so we did see more trooper involvement, more VPSOs, and more fish and game protection in this state. And I applaud you personally for that and your committee. Thank you very much.
All right, we are going to be at ease till 1:10. I've alerted folks down at the lounge to be ready so that we can make this quickly and come back again at 1:10. That we are recess.
Oh, he's down there.
Right. 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 Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. Right. Right. Right.
Just follow me, especially if you leave. We'll leave.
We're smarter after tomorrow.
Well, the Finance Committee back to order. It's 1:20 in the afternoon. It was close to 1:10. We almost hit our target. Appreciate everybody coming back as quickly as possible. We are going to resume where we left off at Public Safety Amendment Number 11. Is there any business before we take up Public Safety Amendment Number 11?
I'll move Number 11 and object to it.
Just
to say that I think Representative Williams became a lot better looking over this right there.
Probably a better soccer player, too.
Yeah. Since Saturday, I had my helper for just a little while. I should probably all see her the next couple of days. So. Anyway. With that, Representative, let's see. Why don't we hold off on Amendment Number 11? We'll come back to it. We'll go to Amendment Number 12, which is Representative Moses, and we will come right back to
it. Here we have Amendment Number 11.
Withdrawal. Amendment Number 12.
11 here.
Okay.
You're just about to pass your amendment, Representative Davies. You're missing out on.
Amendment Number 11, Representative Davies.
Move Number 11.
Object.
There is objection, Representative Davies.
But kind of a weak objection.
Oh.
Object!
Oh, that's how it sounds when you're in an avalanche. Right. We need a locator beat in here. Well, this, as people know, this is the $350,000 to fund the avalanche public education training. We've had quite a few, as everybody knows, it's read the papers, that there have been 9 people killed in avalanche incidents around the state, and we need to have some response to that. We passed a resolution on the floor saying that November would be Avalanche Awareness Month. Well, this is a chance for us to do something, to really do something about it, besides just pass a resolution and ask other people to do something about it. I think that that we need to provide the training, provide the response equipment, and we need to. And one of the things that would happen within this, if we were to fund it, is to consider a or pilot an avalanche information network system. So there's a lot of information you can get if you actually go up in the field, in the hills, do snow pits, check out the condition of the snow, and based on that you can provide avalanche forecasts in the same way you can provide weather forecasts. You can say when the conditions are, when it's probable that avalanches will occur, and provide that information to people. We're capable of doing that. We have the scientific expertise to do it, but we don't have the technical capability right now to actually implement that. This would pilot a program to take a look at the feasibility of doing that in a way that would significantly enhance the safety of people, primarily using snow machines in the backcountry. I think that's the place where we're getting the biggest, you know, with the new machines, with increasing population, we're getting a lot more people back into the backcountry, and they're getting further back. The more powerful machines they can get further back, and it's an area that we need to pay attention to if we're going to provide for the safety of people again. So it's one of those things where we can actually provide some information, we can actually save lives if we were to implement this program.
Representative Bundy.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the search and rescue was fully funded at $283,000. Yeah, it's an interesting challenge on avalanche. I think most avalanches are self-triggered. There's no lack of information out there about conditions that are conducive to avalanches, and there is a certain amount of individual personal responsibility. I think that people have to, we can't have the state providing babysitting service for everyone who gets off the highway. It's an unfortunate tragedy that people are getting injured in avalanches, but as they're young males usually, and as the expression goes, feeling they're bulletproof, I'm not sure there's any amount of money that will keep them from taking the risks that are part of the outdoor adventure that they seem to enjoy, and matter of fact, the risk may enhance that adventure. So while I certainly don't wish anyone any tragedy, I think we do have a search and rescue facility available, and am not confident that a further investment is going to reduce the individual jeopardy that people choose to put themselves in.
I think, Representative Davies, this issue bothers or troubles me too, because certainly you want to be sensitive to those families who have experienced a loss and who are grappling with why and was it necessary. And you certainly want to be sympathetic to that, because I am. You feel for those families. On the other hand, the issue of personal responsibility is very much a factor in my mind, one that a certain amount of blame gets transferred across to government that perhaps isn't justified. And I, as a general philosophy, have the belief that government can't totally protect people from themselves. There is a risk factor in highmarking. We all acknowledge it. We all know it. At the same time, I would venture a guess that even if we outlawed highmarking, it would still occur just because of the thrill. And it's just kind of a fact that's out there. And I wish, if I could say that by spending this $350,000, we are going to prevent all avalanche deaths, we could do it. It'd be a great investment. Absolutely. But as you said, Representative Davies, most of these people anymore, traveling into the outback of Alaska, that the areas that aren't patrolled, areas that you're not going to see a whole lot of signage, you're not going to see a whole lot of additional effort, because it's distance, it's remote. It's why they're going out there. And yet they're triggering those avalanches in these remote areas. So I guess I have a bit of reticence in believing that $350,000 is in fact going to stop a lot of what's happening out there. Representative Croft?
Well, all those are good points. It does seem to me that there's a lot of room between a lack of a public education campaign, just letting everyone do what they're doing, and outlawing it. And the area that's the best to fill, that makes the most sense, is to provide a public education campaign. So you let people know. You don't outlaw. You don't put draconian babysitters, as Representative Bundy said. You just educate people about where the dangers are the worst, what conditions they're the worst, and if you have this system, you can be able to identify it's really dangerous in this section. You're not going to prevent somebody who really wants to risk their own life, but you're on the margins, you're going to have people who will go to a area that's safer. I mean, sort of public education fills the gap between forcing them not to and not doing anything to tell them about the risk. How about... It doesn't have to be one or the other. There will always probably be deaths from these, but we can reduce it by telling people about the dangers, by analyzing which areas are the worst, and this is a fairly small investment to make to do that. We can't afford the money it would take to watch everybody and force them to do right. But we can do something above zero public education. And as I understand this amendment, that it's really this incremental funding that will allow avalanche public education and training. That otherwise we're going to be left with a lot of the search and rescue, which does an excellent job. But this is the education component.
Thank you, Representative Croft. Representative Davies?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's also additional search and rescue equipment, which the other increment doesn't fund. And there are kind of two different pieces to this, and so I've tried to talk to both of those pieces at the same time. But one is what Representative Croft was just referring to primarily, which is the education training and then the extra equipment. The other is the pilot of a network system. I think that was the context that most of your comments were directed to. You know, I think let me try to address them separately. One is the education. I think that providing additional education on these things is something that we do, you know, that we really ought to do. It takes a certain amount of public work to pull the information together. We maintain, we just passed a boating safety bill last year. It's the same kind of thing. We want to provide people with the information, We maintain a ability to respond to accidents when they occur. We have people out on the water. We don't want to tell them they can't go out in the water, or they shouldn't take their families out there. But that we want to educate them as to ways to do that in a safe way. And then when the inevitable happens, in a few instances where it does happen, somebody gets in trouble, we in the Coast Guard maintain a huge response ability to respond to that. We don't have, we don't need that level because the demand isn't that high, thank God, but we don't have a comparable ability to respond to this situation or to educate people about the hazards. And I think that's part of the problem, is that I do think that, with an increasing affluence of our society, that we're getting people that are going in the backcountry that just don't have that experience. They're basically city folks who don't have an awareness of the hazards that are out there. And I think the 90% of the solution is just increasing people's awareness of providing, but it needs to be information based, and that's what this would do. Secondly, with respect to the pilot program, I really think that. That it would make a big difference. If you do an analysis of where these incidents are occurring, that while a number of them do occur quite a ways away from the road, the vast majority are occurring in places where people can get to easily on a weekend, or even in a single day, and go out and ride and get back. And so that you could target certain areas and actually talk about what the avalanche hazard was there. So I think that this is money that would be very well spent, and I guess I'd like to address the question of the extreme. It's not, nobody's saying that if you spend $350,000, you're going to prevent every single accident that might possibly occur out there. We spend a lot of money on state troopers and city policemen, and they're still driving accidents. What we hope to do is to educate enough people as to the rules of the road so that we minimize that. And I think that's the same approach here. Nobody expects this money to be an absolute panacea, but so I hope, Mr. Chairman, that we can see this as an ability to make an incremental improvement. If this money would save one life, in my view, it would be worth it.
Representative Davies, Representative Bundy and I have just been talking. You referenced the Marine Highway, the Marine boating safety provisions, and the thought there obviously is the fact that through those licensure fees, they paid for that educational campaign, even though recent memory tells me that they didn't actually pay for themselves this year as projected. But that having been said, it brings to mind the question, how much are registration fees for snowmobiles? And perhaps we should consider an increment to those fees, with the remainder of those fees going toward an educational campaign. So in essence, the people who are utilizing it or who are creating the work would be also paying for the educational campaign. So I think there is some merit there, a user pay kind of concept. I think it makes more sense than actually just a straight GFF.
Chairman.
Representative Hudson?
Yes, I kind of agree with that. I think that the there is an analogy to the boats as far as this equipment is concerned, much smaller one as far as the application is concerned, but I have family members who are deeply involved into snow machining, and there are organizations of owners who are, in my opinion, should be coming forward with some positive recommendations here. And one of the things that's been suggested by a family member of mine is that maybe there ought to be an additional fee on the annual license or on the acquisition of one of these pieces of equipment, which would build a fund that could go to try to prevent unsafe operations, the high marking and things of that nature. So I agree we need to have a program. I'm not sure that I didn't sit in on the subcommittee, so I don't know what they articulated that it would accomplish by doing what you're doing here. But I certainly would favor some sort of a broader based program.
Representative Bundy.
Well, knowing that there's a danger to begin the afternoon the way we began the morning, I just wanted to observe that I have an orthopedic surgeon in my district who is very, very concerned about the injuries for young people, and this is avalanche, but most of the people that seem to get in avalanches start there at currently in snow machines. It used to be climbers. He'd go much further to licensure and age requirements and speed limits, and I know they're certainly doing that in other states. I doubt the public in Alaska is ready to go there, but that is one way to work toward protecting people from themselves, or trying to help people protect themselves, however you view it. And I guess that's another public policy discussion, and I would be interested in seeing legislation in that area. I believe you have another comment.
Representative Lancaster.
Well, like Representative Bundy said, I hate to start the afternoon like we did the morning, but, and well, I think someone on the floor spoke to Warm and Fuzzy on Friday, and this is probably one of those Warm and Fuzzies. I've snow machined all over Alaska from Nome south the better part of my life, and, you know, you can pass all the laws you want, but if I want a high mark, I'm going to high mark, and so are you, probably. But the thing that worries me most, I think, is last year you did the boating issue, now you're going to do the snow machines, next year we're going to do skateboards or rollerblades, and where do we ever stop? And what kind of exposure are we opening ourselves up to liability-wise? If you start a program, then someone's going to think they're protected, and they're going to come back and sue us when something happens out there in the building. Wilderness. So I'm very apprehensive in voting for this. I'm sorry.
Any further discussion? Lynn.
Representative Moses.
Yeah.
Representative Whitaker.
No.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Hudson.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Mulder.
No.
3A78.
So amendment number 11 has failed. Representative Moses, number 12. Did you withdraw amendment number 12, Representative Moses?
Yes.
All right. Number 12 is withdrawn. Amendment number 13, Representative Croft, which looks vaguely similar to amendment number 8.
Right, Mr. Chairman. I was heartened by how close we were on amendment number 8, but in the interest of proceeding with time, I won't offer amendment number 13 at this time.
All right. That should be the last, last one for public safety with number 13 out there. That brings us to fish and game. And I believe number one is by myself. Number one is restoration of 56,000, 56,700 to the Board of Fish with another 10,000. They have a number of contentious issues coming before the board this year. And so with that, I would number one.
Mr. Chairman, object just for a question?
Certainly.
What was your home phone again? I see 56.7 plus 10, and then it looks like 66.6.
You throwing in an additional
I may not have passed the high school competency test, but...
You're correct, Representative Bundy. That's 56.6.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. So with that technical correction, is there any further objection to amendment number one? Hearing none, it is adopted. Representative Moses, excuse me, amendment number two.
I move amendment number two.
Object.
There is objection. Representative Moses.
Mr. Chairman, habitat section is behind in their workload now. Can you imagine what it'd be like in a potential gas line permitting coming on? And I maintain that if the environmentalists from back east and those in our backyard get wind that we're not even funding our habitat division properly, why would it be a severe mark against us?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In working with the Department of Fish and Game, I did ask for some priorities, and this was not their top priority, and we did work with them to take care of some of their other priorities, and this is an area where they can, you know, they were funded at a maintenance level, and this would have been an increase for them in that particular area.
I certainly suspect also, Representative Moses, that if and when the gas pipeline does come forward, that their permitting section within Habitat will be an increment with it as well. I know that it's part of the discussion that the governor's office has put forward. Any further discussion? Amendment number two, yes, Representative Davies.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I can understand why this might not be the highest priority of the Department of Fish and Game, but if you're concerned about oil and gas development, it might be a higher priority for you. And we're seeing increased exploration in a number of areas where there is sensitivity to wildlife issues, and where if we don't do the job right, we're going to be dragged into court. I don't know how many times we have to go through this exercise. We're going to try to permit something. Because we didn't do the background work, we didn't work with industry, we didn't make the application right, we're going to leave a toehold for a lawsuit, and that'll hold things up. I think it's not just the gas pipeline. It's the increased exploration in PRA, other areas in the back, in the slope, the areas closer to the Brooks Range that are going on right now. That those are areas where there's a significantly increased exploration outside of the existing footprint of the oil industry on the North Slope. And these are going to be areas where we're going to have to do some additional wildlife habitat impact work. It's been shown that if Fish and Game can work with the industry as they develop their exploration plans and as they develop, by just making small changes in those plans, sometimes they can avoid some big problems. And this is kind of one of those sort of prevention areas where if you allow people to work with them ahead of time, we can smooth the problems for everybody. So I think that it's a little too easy to say this wasn't the Fish and Game's top priority. I mean, from their point of view, fine. You know, if it doesn't happen, well, then it didn't impact the wildlife. But if you're interested in making sure that permits get issued in a timely way, I think you might be interested in funding this amendment.
Representative Hudson.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that when we were looking at the fast track, we put $600,000 in the pipeline coordinator's office, and I think the intention there was to use it wherever they needed. If you'll remember, the application had a whole series of individual budget requests within that million-plus application that the governor had put in, and we did put $600,000 in the fast track budget, and I would imagine part of that could conceivably go for these kind of things. No?
Six.
Ron Fistel here.
He's going to put in six.
The fast track is supplemental for this year. That's specifically down the gas pipeline route. And it's for this is for O2, and it's primarily for work on the slopes.
$650, I mean.
Just for clarification, this one is not at all for the gas line. This is for other types of oil and gas development exclusive of the gas line. And that's what they have had an increased workload already in that area.
I stand corrected.
Representative Harris.
Yeah. Just a question to Representative Bundy, the chair of the subcommittee. Was there any request from the industry for this increment in your subcommittee?
Representative Bundy.
No, and I don't think we should be left with the idea, and I don't know that people are creating that impression purposely, but that they're not going to do their work. They would like to expand and be able to do their work more rapidly, perhaps. We did work with the Habitat Division, allow them to reduce some level of paperwork and bureaucracy they felt onerous so that they were able to work at a more efficient level. And I suspect they will, as they did last year, continue to produce permits on a timely fashion.
Any further discussion? Luann?
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Harris.
No.
Representative Lancaster.
No.
Representative Moses.
Yes.
Representative Whitaker.
No.
Representative Bundy.
No.
Representative Croft.
Yes.
Representative Davies.
Yep.
Representative Mulder.
No.
Representative Williams.
No.
3A, 8A.
So, Amendment number two, Fish and Game.
Chairman,
Representative Bundy.
If I might, before you move on, I just wanted to, as a subcommittee chair, add my thanks to the certainly the members of the committee, people from the administration that were very helpful in working with us, acknowledging, fiscal realities, and to my staff who, Patty with Public Safety and Lynn with Fish and Game, who were also very helpful. There's folks from Ledge Finance who as you know, very thorough in finding information for.
Thank you. I know that I share that reflection, Representative Bundy. I have nothing but cooperation from my committee members as well as department members, and I appreciate it greatly. So that should wrap up fish and game. Next, we bring up my personal favorite, corrections. Only from the fact of time. For 7 years, I now have corrections.
Going to sound like Foster.
I know. Some of these things you just can't get rid of, Representative. All right. Before I move Amendment Number 1, I'll briefly describe it. Obviously, each year we get an estimate of how many PFD felon funds we are going to receive. We have that. That amount did get revised just a few days ago. This amendment reflects those funds. Obviously, PFD funds can only go towards specific areas, and one of those is, in fact, inmate health care. So with that, within Amendment Number 1, I'm utilizing $231,000 of PFD funds, putting them into inmate health care, backing those GF funds out, putting $200,000 into community jails, and then the remaining $31,000 into the Anchorage Jail. So with that, I would move Amendment Number 1, Representative Davies. There is more that would come for Anchorage Jail later.
Yeah, I thought the remainder of the 31 was into CRCs.
Oh, excuse me, before I move it, I also have to amend it. That should be crossed out. It should go into operation administration.
Where are you?
I'll withdraw my motion. And on the bottom add for Department of Corrections, BRU, instead of CRCs, it should be operation administration. And for a component, instead of existing CRCs, it should be Anchorage Jail. As we did take care in the following amendment, we will take care of existing CRCs.
And in A following. The following is Anchorage
in
Jail.
In A following.
Okay.
I believe in number 3.
So the component?
The component is Anchorage Jail. Representative Croft.
I just object so we can discuss it. Have you moved it?
Now with it being amended, I will once again move corrections number 1. Representative Cross, under objection.
Yeah, thank you. And I just was curious. I thought there was about 300,000 of permanent fund felon money left. You're using 231. Do you have the exact number on that?
The latest number that we had was 231. And so that was left over, correct, Danny?
Okay.
Unless you have information that we don't have, Representative Croft.
No, probably just misunderstood the same information you had. Okay. With that, I'll just remove my objection to Amendment Number
1. Okay. Thank you, Representative Croft. Any further objection to Amendment Number 1? Hearing none is adopted. Amendment Number 2. In Amendments Number 2, 3, and 4 all relate to the fact that we received some budget amendments at the 11th and 3/4 hour, or maybe 12:15 of the hour, where it was very difficult, after allocations we had been given, to try and make adjustments as they related to increased contractual costs for CRCs, as well as lost VOIA funds, which have really put a crimp on the corrections budget. The consequence of that was, within the original budget that we put forward from the corrections subcommittee, we did short fund the Anchorage Jail. This additional $600,000 within Amendment Number 2 would not fully fund the Anchorage Jail as requested, but would get them much closer than where they were under the subcommittee report. So with that, I would move Amendment Number 2.
Just objecting for the same discussion. So I had them short about 650, and with the 31 from Amendment Number 1 and this 600, you're getting them within $20,000 of it?
Of their original proposal. The Anchorage Jail portion, Representative Croft, is actually broken out into three components. You have the Anchorage Jail, you have the 6th Avenue, and then you have the out-of-state. And they're all, because the Anchorage Jail is coming online in midstream, there is some you aren't going to see the efficiencies or straight transition costs. So rather than try and put it all into Anchorage Jail, they tried to hit over three. So you are correct. even though it's going to cost more than $651,000 to, or I mean, more I than...
The transition itself will cost more
yes.
than that.
Exactly.
Okay, but that gets you very close to what they thought they'd need for the Anchorage jail
component. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll withdraw the objection to amendment number two.
Thank you, Representative Croft. Any further objection? Hearing none, amendment number two is adopted. Amendment number three, again, that relates back to the budget amendments that were put forward. We lost Voya funds as well as had an increased cost to the contracts for CRCs. Again, this was part of that last-minute amendment that we weren't able to deal with in the regular budget. With that, I'd move amendment number three. Representative Croft?
I'll just object to ask where we're getting the money ask what all amendments 1 through 4 do to the cap for corrections. Where were we before on it? And
Representative Croft, it was about 11:30 last night as I searched throughout the budget to try and figure out another place that I could take money and do what I felt was the right thing within corrections. And we have done a pretty good job of scouring the budget, even though I'm sure Anna Lee and Joan are going to find more at the end of the day of one-time fund sources, but I was not able to, at this point in time, find additional locations. So we are utilizing general funds, which brings me about, I think within the corrections budget, about $2.1 million. Above what our allocation was, which is a bad thing for a chairman to do. On the other